Good afternoon. We'll just wait a few seconds here for folks to get situated. Good afternoon. Welcome to the final Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee meeting of our 2008 session. We have a number of bills that we are going to try to get to now, but we do have room 10 reserved, and we'll reconvene at 5:30 to take the remaining bills that we don't get to that are on the agenda now, and then we'll also start taking some amendments and marking up the omnibus policy bill at that time. It's my understanding that we're also being televised, so we welcome those that are watching today. And we have a little bit of a change in the order of the bills, and I just wanted to let the authors who are here know that. We'll still take Representative Ward's bill, House File 2968, first. Then we will move to Representative Dabney's bill, and then Representative Hortman's bill following that. And then I hope we'll be able to have Representative Morrow come in. He's vice chair of the Education Committee meeting. He's here now, and we'll get him when he's when his bills are up. And then I have several bills as well, but I may need to be going to the local government committee at any moment. So, what's that? So apparently they need me now. So I will give the gavel over to our able vice chair, Representative Mador, and we'll start again, Ward Dabney Hortman. And thank you very much.
Representative Ruth, would you like to move the minutes?
I'd be happy to. Well read and they're great.
All right. Okay. All those in favor of the approval of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are accepted. And we now move on to Representative Ward's bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Ward. Could you state your name and to the bill, please?
Thank you, Chair Mador and members. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Representative John Ward, today to present the House File 2968 to you. You heard this House File last year at 676. This is a response to a constituent family of mine, Mark and Kathy Jordan, whose son Joey was killed by a repeated offender who had a B card or a restricted driver's license, which did not allow him to buy or consume alcohol. The offender was sold and served alcohol. Excuse me, Madam Chair. I have an amendment. Can I speak? Should I talk about the amendment? Adopt the amendment first, or can I speak to the bill, or how do you want to proceed?
Do we have copies of the amendment?
I'm hoping you do. It was supposed to be an A2 amendment.
We don't have that, Representative Ward.
You don't?
Just a moment. Is it something you can speak to, Representative Ward?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, when she comes back with my copy.
Oh. Okay. Well, any other background you'd like to give
us
while we're waiting?
Yes, I will continue then. The offender was sold and served alcohol, and it was intoxicated when he hit and killed Joey Jordan. The current B card license only has on the back of the license in very, very small print that this person is not to be sold alcohol or served alcohol. The restriction is not visible enough so that when a B card holder is carded or asked for a license, many of the bar owners or bartenders only see a valid, acceptable license. This bill, House File 2968, will make the appearance of the license the same as the license of an under 21-year-old minor that is not allowed to drink as well. It will also have the letter R on the front of the card to symbolize a restricted license and allow a bartender or establishment the right to refuse to serve alcohol to a B card holder. I believe that House File 2968, which is also known as Joey's Law, will save lives and save families from having to go through what the Jordan family have gone through. ask you for your support, and I will be happy to answer any questions. And Madam Chair, I will attempt to talk through the amendments at this time if you would like me to. Do you have the bill? Do you have a copy of the bill, I'm hoping?
Yes, Representative Ward, we do have a copy of the bill. The amendment, though, we do not, so...
Okay.
Can you explain the amendment?
Yes, the amendment, if you go to 2.9...
Okay. Mr. Burrows has been... Go ahead, then.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, okay. 2.9, if you delete these words, a symbol or letter, and insert the letter R. That's the first part of the amendment.
Oh, here it comes around now. All right.
And the second part of the amendment, Madam Chair, is go to 2.12, and where it says may, delete that and insert shall. And Madam Chair, that's the whole amendment, A2.
Okay, Representative Ward, then I, Chair recommends that we move Amendment A2 to Bill 2968. All those in favor? Members are saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And now... Okay, so now that it's been the way that you want it, to your bill, please, Representative Ward. Is there any testifiers to it, or...?
I was asked not to bring any testifiers today, Madam Chair, so I am Lone Ranger.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I will say that Mark and Kathy Jordan did email me today and asked for their strong consideration of this bill moving on as well.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ward, do you know if there's a fiscal note on your bill?
Yes, there is a fiscal note. Madam Chair.
Yes.
Representative Hortman. I just received a fiscal note for $76,000 to do the change of the bill. So, implement the changes in the current license, restricted license.
Thank you.
At one time, President Horton.
Any other questions from the committee? Representative Ruth?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wondered if you could hear from DBS or somebody on this if there's any concern or...
Do we have anyone here from... Oh, we do. Welcome to the committee, ma'am. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joan Kopczynski. I'm the Driver Services Director.
Representative Ruth, your question?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kopczynski, just wondering if your take on this, if there are any problems with this or any concerns with the department?
The department is neutral on the change itself. I can explain a little bit as to why that particular restriction was not on the card to begin with when we went to our new contract, if the committee would like to hear that.
Briefly?
Okay. It was simply a matter of a protection for the individual. When the card is used at a Target, for example, the decision was made to not let everyone, like a clerk at a Target store, to see that alcohol restriction on the license. But if it is the wish of the committee to move this bill forward, we certainly will work with the author to make it happen.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Then the motion before us is to pass this bill on to the Transportation Finance Division as amended. All those in favor?
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The motion passes, and it is referred to the Transportation Finance Division. Thank you, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Yes, we're moving on to Representative Dabney's bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Dabney.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. The page... Pardon me? I'm here to present House File 3835, creating a medium-speed vehicle category here in state statute. Currently, the page is passing out a handwritten amendment that Mr. Burris was good enough to provide. I would describe it as largely technical in nature. It does delete some language referring to as certified by the manufacturer. These vehicles currently under federal regulation are capped. You can only be sold or manufactured if they go up to 25 miles an hour. They're capable of higher speeds with aftermarket patches, thank you. But the manufacturer could not certify that higher speed limit, so it would not be appropriate to ask them to do so. And then there's some clarifying language regarding federal regulations there at the bottom of the handwritten amendment. If someone would be good enough to move both the bill and the amendment, I would be appreciative.
I would actually do that, Representative Dabney. The chair moves that we accept Amendment A1 to House File 3835. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the amendment is there, and then the chair moves that we move File 3835 to be held over, as amended, to be held over for possible inclusion. So to the bill then.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. House File 3835 creates a new medium-speed vehicle category in state statute. We currently have a neighborhood or low-speed electric vehicle category governing electric vehicles that are limited to operating at a maximum of 25 miles per hour on streets with a speed limit of up to 35 miles an hour. A medium speed category as contemplated in this bill would allow these neighborhood electric vehicles to meet the construction and safety requirements in the applicable federal regulations and state law to operate at a speed of up to 35 miles an hour on roads with a speed limit of up to 35 miles an hour. Creating this category, as the states of Washington and Montana have already done, will support the growing market for both the production and use of these vehicles in Minnesota. With rising gas prices and growing concerns on the environmental impact of burning of fossil fuels, expanding the transportation choices of Minnesotans is a good public policy initiative by this legislature. With me today is Mr. Tim Cummer, owner of Cushman Motors, an over 50-year-old family-owned business in South Minneapolis that sells one brand of the neighborhood electric vehicle.
Welcome to the committee, sir. You state your name and your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Tim Cummer, and I am the president of Cushman Motor Company, Minneapolis-based company since 1949. And we have distributed electric vehicles for actually over 40 years for non-road purposes. And for the last 2 years, we have actively been distributing the NEV electric licensed vehicles. And in that 2 years' time, two things have become very clear about the use of these electric vehicles on the roads of Minnesota. And the first one we've learned through literally hundreds of conversations we've had with people at energy fairs, green expos, trade shows, things of that nature. And what they have stated is that there is a tremendous desire to be able to use these 100% electric vehicles, zero emissions, for at least a portion of their transportation needs. Second thing we somewhat painfully learned is that they also feel that the 25 mile per hour top speed that these vehicles are restricted to really prevents them from being able to use them the way they were intended to be used. That is, as commuters, short trip, errand running vehicles, because they feel that they'd be a hindrance to the other traffic that they have to share those roadways with. And for that reason, we would like to find a way for them to be able to operate these vehicles at the 35 miles an hour, at the 35 mile an hour posted speed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Representative Dabneys, and the chair renews his motion that House File 3835 be, as amended, is held over for possible inclusion. And
that's it.
So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Members.
Thank you. Very
thank
much.
You.
Right. Representative Portman.
Oh.
Members, this is House File 3792. The chair moves that House File 3792, moves it to the Transportation Finance Division. So with that, Representative Portman, choose your bill.
Madam Chair, thank you for your offer to move the bill, but I'm a member of the committee. I can move it. The other thing is it has to go to local government next. So I would move that House File 3792 be recommended to pass and re-referred to local government.
Okay.
So I have to go back to Transportation Finance. Yeah. Then I would request to go back to Transportation Finance. And at that point, we'll move it. That would be tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First, it's going to Transportation Finance.
Madam Chair, yeah. I'm just wondering if it's going to meet deadline or if it can get to local government on time.
Sure, we will make that happen.
Might have to look just a little. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members
thank
of the
you.
Committee. This is a really brief bill. What it does is it transfers governance of North Star Commuter Rail from MnDOT to Met Council, and to speak on the bill is Judge Shetman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here before you with this bill. What we're seeking is to have the operations of the North Star Commuter Rail Line transferred from MnDOT to the Metropolitan Council. We have got support from the Governor's Office, from Department of Transportation, the counties that are affected. It's basically Sherburne County outside of the metropolitan area, and all of those counties, along as well with the NCDA, have all offered their support of this bill. Since the council is the transit authority here in the metropolitan area, the North Star Commuter Rail Line is going to be feeding, basically, it's going to be coming right along all of our transit stops between basically Maple Grove and south to our Coon Rapids. And what we want to do is be able to fold that into our system. And since this line is also going to connect with the Central Corridor, the Hiawatha Line, and basically just fold right into our system, we think that it's we'd appreciate it if the legislature would allow us to make that change. And one thing that this bill also does is that it doesn't just affect North Star, it's any commuter rail line that terminates in the metropolitan area.
Questions from the committee? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Where does this end? I mean, if we run the line up to Duluth, are you going to be handling that line too, or the high-speed rail to Chicago? Or when is it that you will stop overreaching your jurisdiction?
Our Representative Portman.
Representative Earhart, I know that you wanted Mr. Fenton to respond to that, but I think this is exactly the jurisdiction of Metropolitan Transit, and the reason I do is what
Mr. Fetman said about a system. And right now, in the metropolitan area, the entity that's running the transit system is Metropolitan Transit. And I think they're doing a fantastic job with regard to linking up the train to bus schedules and getting people to be able to connect from not just to the North Star, but from North Star to other places in the metropolitan area. It just makes a whole lot of sense to me to have them doing this.
Representative Hortman, you didn't really answer the question, but that's okay. Where does the jurisdiction stop? When we cross the borders into Wisconsin? Or what kind of a power grab is this, in other words?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I hope you're still not upset with me over the damn tax line, because I don't know, maybe that's where this is coming from, but I don't think that the council is speaking of power grab here at all. I think you raised a very good point about the high-speed rail and also the Duluth to Minneapolis line, and with the Duluth line, we would certainly have to sit down with the folks from MnDOT and figure out how this would work, because I think that service may be more than just a commuter rail line type of service than what we're talking about here with the North Star piece. One other thing I want to mention that this bill does is that it allows the Metropolitan Transit Police to be able to have enforcement powers along the line, similar to what we have on our bus system and on our rail system right now.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm only kidding about the power grab. I'm just wondering if we shouldn't set up a separate agency just to handle rail and buses.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I think you should work with Representative Hausman on that, because that is an area of special concern for her, that we are getting to the point where we need a Minnesota transit agency that deals with transit in the entire state and looks at commuter rail to Northfield and commuter rail to Mankato, commuter rail to Wilmer and Duluth.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hortman. I thought we had one. Doesn't MnDOT have a Department of Transportation Rail Authority? And do we have MnDOT here, and do they want to speak to this issue? I guess that's a couple questions.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, I can answer one of them. There is a transit office that's at MnDOT that deals with Greater Minnesota Transit, but it's largely a funding function, and the actual administration and running of those transit systems is done by those transit systems. So quite different than what Metropolitan Transit does is the function that MnDOT has with regard to Greater Minnesota Transit.
And Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, the folks from MnDOT are here, but I think that you're right, that MnDOT does have a department that deals with rail, but I think that's freight rail and not necessarily commuter rail. But Ms. Parker is here, and I think that she can
say it.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Parker. State your name and give your opinion.
Mr. Chairman, members of the, Madam Chairman, I'm sorry, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. Representative Stevenson, the department has rail activities in two offices in MnDOT, one dealing with freight and one dealing with passengers, but it is extremely limited, and it is limited to providing staff for the multi-state effort to build high-speed rail from Minneapolis to Chicago. The state is part of a multi-state group seeking to make that happen, and we have been very involved in the construction of commuter rail, and in managing the federal funds and things like that, but the department does not provide any operation of any kinds of services, whether it's transit buses or rail service, and we have never, to this day anyway, seen MnDOT as an agency that would operate either rail or bus services. And I don't know that we've recently even had any discussions about how that should be in the future. But I think everyone recognizes that as services increasingly bridge the metro and the non-metro area, it's probably appropriate that someday soon there should be a discussion about the best way to accommodate that. But the department, because of its engineering function, has been involved in the design and construction of rail services.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Parker, thanks for that explanation. I was a Midwest Interregional Passenger Corridor Commissioner for 2004 to 2006. So I understand a little bit on the Chicago line and the multi-state function that we're working on in particular here, and it's comforting to know that you have someone in your office that is working that issue as well. But I think my question to this particular bill would be, is this preempting that discussion between MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council? Is this something that forms a structure for that interface to begin, or are we jumping the gun here and expanding the purview of the Metropolitan Council that is ultimately going to be the go-to guy without real intent here?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, the department doesn't have any problem with this legislation. It has been discussed within MnDOT, and we are comfortable with it. It doesn't, I think, change anything about the way we handle the initial development of new services. This basically just turns over the operation, and then any subsequent improvements that would be made to a service already in operation to the Metropolitan Council, which will be the operating agency once the actual service commences.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and to that point, I understand we're in the initial phases of what turns out to be, after this last transportation bill, a blossoming transit project, of which I have feelings on both sides of the fence on this thing. However, I guess the infrastructure, how we move forward in this proposal, rather than trying to catch up, of pushing some of these proposals, I'd like to see some kind of interface between long-term transition or long-term plans between MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council to say if we're going to proceed with some of this. And one of the things I've been talking about in this committee and in the Finance Committee is, How do we balance the freight versus the passenger with the rail assets? And those are state assets, even though they may be controlled by Metropolitan Council in terms of how those rails go through the metro area, they still have to interface with freight issues. And so if we basically say that Met Council is going to have purview over the passenger side, there's nobody representing the freight side other than MnDOT, and how does that interface? That raises serious concerns to me.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, with regard to the North Star commuter rail in particular, and I would assume that the development of other lines will follow this pathway, extensive negotiations went on with Burlington Northern Santa Fe, because Burlington Northern moves the freight in that corridor. And so that freight issue is definitely one that everybody spends a lot of time working through. But with regard to development of new corridors, the development of this corridor and others are coming from the leadership of the county regional rail authorities. So the development and coordination of commuter rail is not already happening within MnDOT. We're not moving something like that's happening at MnDOT somewhere else. The development of the rail corridors is coming from county regional rail authorities. And so what we're talking about in this bill isn't the policy debate that we should have about developing a commuter rail system for the whole state and where that should happen. Right now that's happening in the regional rail authorities in the metro counties, and this bill wouldn't affect that.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Shecklin, in the past we had some problems with procurement,
mm-hmm.
and I see you have best value again. Is there any, are there any guidelines in that? That was a real problem in the past. Basically, you have an alternative. Is that just that the women are committing them to use that method rather than low bid?
Madam Chair, Chairman Leader, we did put the best value procurement in here intentionally. I remember last year we had an issue with a specific bus procurement that was going on, and we wanted to make sure that we gave ourselves some flexibility as far as our procurement of services for this line. But one of the things that we wanted to take into consideration here is the life cycle costing, the delivery schedule, compatibility with existing systems for the operations of the line. I think that other transit providers across the nation who provide commuter rail service also use the best value, so we're not just limited to the low-cost providers. And I think I was hoping that the legislature and the committee would would find that as a good move by the council to put that best value in there, because we did run into some pretty major issues with that whole bus procurement last year, and I for one want to do whatever I can to avoid that again this year. And to let you know that Mark Furman, who is the project manager for the North Star project, is on his way here. I know the bill was added in very short notice, so he's taking care of some things, and he would be able to speak to you in a lot more detail about the procurement than I am able to, and I apologize for that, but I would be happy to have that conversation with you and Mark before it goes to your full committee, or before it comes out of local government. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative
Earhart. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering about other transit buses and so forth. The Metropolitan Council pretty well handles that in the metropolitan area, but we have MnDOT is also involved in transit outstate, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what do we do about that now? Are we going to bring that under your Met Council too? Or?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, we are not suggesting that we absorb Greater Minnesota Transit. MnDOT has their own division that handles that, and we are by no means suggesting that we do that. I think that would violate many things that the council is doing. Number one being the law that says that our jurisdiction only extends within the seven county metropolitan area. So,
well, Madam Chair, you're changing that law right now.
Madam Chair, Representative Eric, we are, and that's why this bill is headed to local government after it goes to the full finance committee. But the jurisdiction that we'll have along this line is basically right along the line, and we have no power over planning, wastewater, regional park, or anything like that. I mean, this is very it's defined very finitely, and we are trying to figure out them. The other thing is that the counties, and those drivers here from the NCDA, are supportive of this outside the metro area. This is definitely not a power grab by any means, but that is why we'll be heading to Representative Hillstrom's committee to have that particular discussion.
Madam Chair, are there any reason to believe that where those rail lines run, the counties will want to partake in the 0.50 out there to support the transit?
Mr. Shetton.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I think that's a great question, but it's definitely a question to ask the county, and I'm not probably the right person to ask.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm concerned that we're going to be, the counties in the metropolitan area are going to be paying for the operation of this, not just bringing them under the metropolitan council.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, good point. I would say that, Greater Minnesota Transit, if we're going to be funding this through metropolitan area transit funding, that is the potential that the county funded, or else Greater Minnesota Transit can share in the state share of that, similar to how the council is going to have to pay for this through the monies that we receive from the state. But again, that's probably a question that maybe Mr. Shriver can address better than I can.
Do you want to ask the question, Representative Earhart, or do we want to?
Well, Madam Chair, I think I raised a number of questions, but if Representative Shriver would like to, or former Representative Shriver would.
Madam Chair, I'm Bill Shriver representing North Star Corridor Development Authority. Let me assure you, when this issue came up at the NCDA meeting, and those members are Sherburne, Anoka, and Hennepin, that the Sherburne County Commissioners had a lot of questions to ask, because there isn't any way, shape, or form that Sherburne County wants to become a part of the metropolitan area. But they also want North Star Commuter Rail to be successful. They understand that from a consumer standpoint, a person ought to be able to check one website and have a full understanding of the transit schedule throughout the region. They understand that they ought to be able to pick up and just make one phone call and understand how North Star Commuter Rail times interface with bus times. They understand that there should only be one insurance policy handling the liability, that one agency needs to be responsible, and so that it's transit is truly seamless. So with that understanding, they said, yes, we understand, and these are the Sherburne County Commissioners talking now, We understand that it is most appropriate for the Metropolitan Council to operate North Star Commuter Rail Service as compared to the Minnesota Department of Transportation, that everyone would acknowledge operating commuter rail lines is not a core activity for MnDOT. So we could have done this 2 years ago when it became so obvious that it was the Metropolitan Council that should have been, that should do the operating. Unfortunately, we were in the midst of a funding request from the Federal Transit Administration, and until that full funding grant agreement was in place, we thought that we ought not to change any of the details of the application to the Federal Transit Administration. So that's why it's before you this year as compared to at an earlier date. That full funding grant agreement was signed in December, and now it's appropriate that the transition occur from MnDOT to the Metropolitan Council. As it relates to the sales tax and the paying for the operation, when this was initiated and in conversations with Governor Plenty, it was the understanding that the state or Metropolitan Council would pick up half of the operating assistance and that the individual counties would share in the other half. Now, if Anoka and Hennepin impose the 0.25% sales tax, then the sales tax proceeds would go towards their 50% share. In the case of Sherburne County, they are not a part of the metropolitan area. They are unable to join the metro area sales tax, so they would have two choices. Either they would have to go on their own and do a referendum for a half-cent sales tax, which may be considerably more than they would need, or they can come back and look at the options and perhaps come to the 2009 session of the legislature and say, we too would like to be a part of the metropolitan transportation area, and we'd like to join in on the same terms and conditions as the others.
Well, Madam Chair, I think there's one important question, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the bill that we just enacted into law said that the outlying counties could enact a sales tax of up to 0.5. So if Sherburne County decided, instead of relying on a property tax to fund their portion of the North Star Commuter Rail, they wanted to do the sales tax, they could have a referendum on any amount up to 0.5. They don't have to go to 0.5.
Thank you, Representative Horton.
Madam Chair, are you saying that they have the choice between 0.25 or 0.50?
No. Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, in the legislation that we passed into law over the governor's veto, it said that the counties outside the metropolitan area could enact by referendum a sales tax of up to 0.5. So they could go 0.015 all the way up to...
Madam Chair, my concern is that we're going to be back in Hennepin County carrying the load again for transit services outside of our area, and we're not, well, you're shaking your head there, Mr. Schreiber, but I know that we just unloaded that finally after we're having the citizens of Hennepin County pay for the other line out here. Hiawatha. We just unloaded that, I think. And now we're looking, we're going to extend the taxing authority of the Met Council outside of this to...
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, North Star Corridor Development Authority, the NCDA, is a joint powers agreement between all these counties. And I can assure you that my county commissioner in Anoka County, Dan Earhart, is no more interested in subsidizing Sherburne County share of this and my friend Peter McLaughlin in Hennepin County or Mike Opat in Hennepin County. So through the Joint Powers Board agreement and that this is the North Star Corridor Development Authority, I am very confident that we will not be subsidizing Sherburne County.
All right, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Shetland. I guess the question I had that ties into what Representative Leader was talking about, the language here about best value, and we're not talking the best value design build that they kept confusing that was used on the bridge by MnDOT we're talking the best value that was passed last year that the local governments have the option of using. Is that the best value we're talking about?
Madam Chair, Mr. Nelson, I believe that is the case. I can tell you definitively when Mr. Furman shows up, but I can tell you with almost certainty that that is the kind that we're proceeding with.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would have more comfort if there was something in the language that cited that statute in law instead of just leaving it vague, because I know there was a lot of confusion this last year when talking about the design build of the new bridge, and they kept saying design build best value, and people were confusing it with the best value statute that we passed last year. So they're two different things.
Representative Portman?
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe Representative Hillstrom carried that best value contract legislation last year, and it's going. This bill is going to her committee next. So I would suggest in between now and when it gets heard in local government that we talk to Representative Hillstrom about that issue.
Give me more comfort, yes.
And finally, about the local government committee, I should add that we have a minor amendment regarding the rights of railroad employees that we'll be adding in that committee because it wasn't ready for today.
Okay, any more questions from the committee? All right, then, Representative Hortman, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so all those in favor of, and this is going to transportation. Okay, all those in favor of this bill moving over to transportation finance, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right, bill is moved. Thank you, Representative Hortman. Representative Hornstein. Members, we're looking at House File 3896.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes,
members.
Thank you very much.
I can move the bill. You can
please?
Move the bill.
Please. Why don't you?
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, I would move that House File 3896 be recommended to pass and move to the Transportation Finance Committee for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation policy bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Hortman. At this point, we're going to take testimony first before we take questions, and we'd like to have the testifiers get organized. We really, because of our time constraints, it's 5 minutes for each side, so please be ready. So, Representative Hornstein, if you'd like to go ahead to your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and because of the time constraint, I'll just simply say that House File 3896 was familiar to the committee. This is the Railroad Walkway Safety Act. We heard it last year. It was not included in the transportation policy bill the first time around. We're hoping that we can move this bill along, and I still have not given up on trying to get the sides together, and we hope we can do that as well. But because of our deadlines, we're moving the bill today, and I will just hand it over to Mr. Bill Qualley from the United Transportation Union, who has brief testimony, I believe one additional testifier too. Okay, they will be brief, Madam Chair, and they know the time limit here. So I will just pass it on to Mr. Qualley.
Thank you very much. Mr. Qualley, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Committee members, thank you. Representative Hornstein, again, we'll try to be as brief as possible. We have a handout in your packet with some information as well. We have brought a couple of display pieces for you to simply help you understand our bill. Our bill seeks to improve the walkway conditions for railroad workers in the state of Minnesota. This gray pile right here is essentially right-of-way ballast that is used on the main lines in the state of Minnesota, and this is yard ballast, which is what our bill proposes that will be placed in key specific and limited areas along main line switches, turnouts, where crews regularly work on the ground or in yards. I will be very brief here and simply say that we believe that this will improve the safety of our railroad workers by walking on this type of ballast, and we think our bill will reduce injuries and also therefore save costs to the carriers.
We have had a chance to take a look at a carrier handout that talks about opposition, and we do want to say that we really strongly, the first time we've seen this today, object to the some of the information in here. Finally, this committee has tried to work with the carriers and compromise on a piece of legislation. We will continue to work to compromise, and we hope that we can have this bill passed today so that we can continue to work towards protecting the safety of the railroad workers in the state of Minnesota. I would like to introduce you, if I may, Committee Chairwoman, thank you. I would like to bring Jerry Ott forward from the Canadian Pacific Railroad, is the local chairman for the UTU Local 911, as well as Dave Reilly for the UTU Local 650. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Qualley. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record. And
My name is Jerome Ott, and good afternoon. I preside in Wabasha, Minnesota, hired out Milwaukee Railroad in June 1st, 1973. I have 35 years of railroad experience. I come from a fourth-generation railroad family. The railroad I work for is a CP Rail / Sioux / Milwaukee Railroad. Been involved with safety programs since the beginning of safety programs with the Sioux Line Railroad. I started in the programs in the mid-1980s. I worked on both St. Paul service area and 40 service area. My territory runs from Portage, Wisconsin through St. Paul, which I am a local chairman of UTU 911. Also, my territory as a local chairman runs from St. Paul to Duluth, St. Paul to Glenwood, and also Twin State Terminal. I've been also co-chair of the Sioux Line Safety and Health Committee from 2005 and 2007. In some of my duties as co-chairman, we have monthly meetings and try to improve safety. During that time, I was part of the committee from 1980 to 2007. We walked every yard track, every industry, made a lot of documentation of unsafe conditions. The CP runs from, like I say, from the Crescent to Glenwood to Thief River to Duluth, and soon it'll be in September, it'll be in taking over the DM&E and Ice Railroad. We're asking you to help with this railway safety maintenance bill. We have a lot of workers, and we lost a lot of brothers and sisters to unsafe walking areas due to the lack of standards and inspections. I have a list of all the people we lost over the last couple of years. Just a small summary. We have all due to unwalking safety. There was a conductor in Glenwood that sprained his ankle and lost several weeks of work. Another conductor sprained his leg due to large ballast. We have a conductor slipped on the ice and walking condition and injured his shoulder, lost time. We lost the conductor from a poorly maintained walk area and sprained his ankle. Another conductor slipped on large rock in St. Paul, was injured. And then we have also lost numerous members due to disability injuries that they no longer come back to work, including two from my family. I lost my cousin, same age as me. He was had 6 years of railroad experience. Went through the ice, broke both his ankles. Mm-hmm. Snapped them off. One they could fix, the other one they had to make solid. He walked with a cane. He started walking with a cane at the age of 25 years old, and he still walks with a cane today at the age of 54. He's the same age as myself. My brother Mike also walking areas got off, was walking, tides buried in the snow, tripped on the ties, fell down, broke both the kneecaps off. He's no longer working the railroad.
We got
anyway, I just hope you would would pass this bill and ask for support.
Thank you very much.
Just my information is a lot of these conditions are brought to shortage or cuts and section crews and inspectors on the railroad. In 1972, we had 30 inspectors, and this is between River Junction and St. Paul and sectionmen, and today's date when we got 17. It's been the same amount of territory.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Ott. At this point, I need to move along to the Mr. Apex.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name, and again, it's a five-minute limit. Thank you.
My name is John Abbott. I'm with the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. There's a little misnomer in the title. And this is Brian Sweeney, who's with the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad.
Thanks.
I'm going to let him go first, seeing as he's on your agenda, and I'm going to kind of ditto when we're done.
Ditto. Okay. Welcome to the committee. Can you state your name, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Sweeney. I'm legislative counsel for BNSF Railway in St. Paul. We are opposed to this legislation. It is legislation that is not needed. It would address the situation by forcing us to put money that we would otherwise spend on track and on equipment and on other necessary items into walkways. Last year, when this issue was discussed, we said that we would take a look at it over the interim and see what the situation was and what the appropriate steps would be to address it. From what we have seen, there is not a situation of really great magnitude. In Minnesota in 2007, there were 22 total injuries to rail workers suffered by rail employees as a result of slip, trip, and fall incidents. Most of those did not occur by the track. Of that number, about the number of injuries total was 22 for slip, trip, and fall. That's about half of what it was 10 years ago. Of those 22 falls, 8 were listed as being the result of ballast conditions, an object on the ballast or an uneven surface. That's 8 of them, which is also less than half of what it was 10 years ago. In the 5-year period in Minnesota ending in 2002, Minnesota Railroads averaged 21 such injuries. Minnesota Railroads averaged 21 such injuries. In the last 5 years, the average dropped to 9. So we're being asked to spend millions of dollars on a problem that has already been reduced by more than half over the last several years. So it would be one thing if the number of injuries total was rising, but that's been cut by more than half. It would be one thing if the number of falls, total falls, including in offices, in locomotive cabs, on ladders, on stairs, if those were going up, but they've dropped by a half. The number of falls affected by this proposed legislation has also dropped by more than a half, to an average of 9 in the last 5 years. I'd point out that the Federal Railroad Administration has jurisdiction over some of the incidents that we're just finding out about here in the handouts that have been presented. Federal Railroad Administration and existing Minnesota state law, which has not really been invoked, I think, a total of 3 times in the last year, which is the first time in many years that anybody has tried to use it. So solution that's being proposed is a needless expense, and it also has a potential safety risk associated with it. One of the jobs of ballast is to drain water away from track. As an engineer once told me, water is the enemy of track. The small ballast does not drain water as well as the large ballast does. Water will gather, it will, over time, create a safety problem that would have to be addressed through increased maintenance, or else there could be both physical problems for people with puddling of water and ice formation, or because of the degradation of the track structure itself caused by water. As I pointed out, it would force us to spend money on the situation that is already being improved. We do spend money. We spend a lot of money. About 20% of our revenues each year is spent on capital. Most of that goes to track, more than any other industry. It's not that we don't want to spend money. It's that this would force us to take money away from where we need to spend it to put it into this particular area. So we ask that this bill not be passed and that this subject also not be included in the policy bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Draper?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for my voice. That's one railroad you heard from. You get 21 railroads in the state of Minnesota. Let me be clear. The 21 railroads in the state of Minnesota oppose this legislation, and we're asking them not be included in the policy on this bill this time around. There's a lot of reasons that we pass bills around here, and generally they're for good and necessary purposes. You don't think this is a good and necessary purpose. If you take a look at the bill, which I know we've been here a lot of times, but I think it's well worth your consideration, the reference was made a little earlier that we're talking about doing this in only a few limited areas. Let me get right to the point. If you take a look at page 2, 2.7 to 2.14, we're talking about places where we've got to lay these things down. And you'll notice that the segments that have to be constructed with this variety of stuff include walkways at main and secondary switches and turnouts, walkways by sidetrack train inspection points, walkways by tracks where relief train crews frequently board or deboard trains en route, walkways by industrial track, turnouts and spotting areas, and walkways by main track within 2 miles of either direction of a track side rail train detector, with a total of not less than 500 feet on both sides of the track. And then when we get done with that, then the commissioner has an opportunity to specify where else we ought to be laying out this track. Quickly, you know, trains and people do not mix real well. I think we all understand that. And that's why railroads spend a lot of time encouraging, promoting, and bringing forward everything that we can do to try to find ways to keep our employees and our workplace safe. You're hearing about a bill today, but the other things that we do that may or may not always be taken advantage of are the safety committees that you heard about just a couple of minutes ago. Track detection, track defect books, the safety hotline. I think you got some materials to talk about calls that came in on safety hotlines. There's the chance to talk with your manager about this, and you'll see a number of the items that were issued are in those sheets that you have identified calls that were made in the managers, and you can talk to the superintendent's office. I know Mr. Qualley and the superintendent here in the UP have had or attempted to have various conversations, and the communication is the way to go about that. Not by passing some more legislation that goes into the size of this rock and these gravel and goes into a whole host of different places where this has to be put. Let me just say, we don't support this legislation. We oppose this legislation, and we'd encourage you not to include this in the transportation policy bill. I think we used up our 5 minutes.
Thank you.
I hope we were clear.
Yes, you did. Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we know the total amount of dollars on this?
Hornstein?
Madam Chair, my understanding from Mr. Pauley is there's no fiscal note, although MnDOT may have, you know, I know that they have sent us a memo that I read like just a couple hours ago with some concerns, but my understanding is there is no fiscal note attached to this at this time.
Representative Ruth?
Madam Chair, do we have someone that could speak to that?
Someone from MnDOT? Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Cecil Selman. I'm the Director of the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations for MnDOT. There is no fiscal note. We saw this legislation on Monday, so we haven't had a chance to look at the cost, but we are not supporting the bill. The way the bill is drafted, it would require additional activities for my office, and that would need to come out of existing resources. There's no resources identified. The resources we presently use for our rail grade crossing improvement program, for working with branch lines to improve their service, and also supporting highway construction programs would be the programs that would have to lend resources to take the responsibilities, take on the responsibilities identified by this legislation. We are presently processing complaints, one complaint about walkway that was put forward by Mr. Qualley and his union, and we feel that a good result will come from that, that the company that owns the sidetrack that was the source of complaint has agreed to clean up the walkway, and so we think existing law is there and is having effect.
I might further comment that in looking at it, we see some problems with implementing the bill in the way it's been drafted, and we, as the administrator of the bill, we think it would be very difficult to administer this law as drafted.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it sounds like we were asking two different questions.
Yes.
Because it sounds as though, I mean, if I understood her correctly, she wondered what is the additional cost imposed on railroads, and what I hear you saying is we haven't provided for the services that you would provide in your department to inspect. I think the answer we got was maybe to a different question.
Mm-hmm.
But just to approach it from a different perspective, presumably, my understanding was that this has to do with new yard tracks. Presumably, they are required to construct a certain standard of safety. And does somebody, does anyone in MnDOT inspect to be certain that when they have constructed to those standards, they've actually
Madam Chair, yep. Representative, we do not engage in inspection. We do not have a person on our staff who has the background or capability to perform the function at this time.
And Madam Chair, is my assumption correct that there's presumably when they construct new, they would have to build in standards for worker safety? Would that be a correct assumption?
Madam Chair, I'm not the one to answer that question because I really don't understand what MnDOT's role in the construction of new track would be under this law. It seems to me that we are in a regulatory position, and part of the unclarity is how we would come into it under a complaint proposition. There's no setting up of a program for us to go out proactively, be involved in construction of these yards.
And then, sir, I was thinking more under current law, but you say that's not the case under current law either? Not this bill, but under...
Madam Chair, Representative, no, we do not go out and do inspections under the current law either. It is a complaint and a hearing process.
Thank you, Representative Houseman. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Ruth?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I should probably start by... Representative Houseman was correct. I did... ask that actually of the railroad, but I also wanted to hear from MnDOT, so I'm thankful to get that. And I just, in looking at this, Madam Chair, it seems that the existing law is working, it is being enforced. I remember that we've talked through the testimony today, the injuries have decreased. MnDOT is saying it's difficult to administer and that it's going to take dollars possibly from highway construction. That is a major concern, so I would hope that we would not pass this out of committee today.
Okay. Is there a...
Madam Chair, I just will maybe allow Mr. Pauly just a very brief rebuttal, and then I think we're ready to vote.
That would be fine. Thank you. Mr. Pauly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, very quickly, the drainage issue is key, and we assume that the drainage is going to be in this language. It's a moot issue. Secondly, I'd like to point out that Section 7 of this bill essentially grandfathers in all existing track. And so, therefore, they don't have to bring the track up to standards until such a time you repair, remodel, or resurface. Not adjust, but at that time, so they really don't have a cost increase. We strongly disagree with the carrier's testimony about cost and some of the things are on record that they've said here about what this bill proposes to do. And finally, I'd like to point out that the safety committee processes, we have gone to the safety committee processes, and they simply are not fixing the hazards out there. But this is about building walkway in certain specific areas rather than maintaining what's on top of them. Finally, the state of Minnesota has a transportation policy omnibus bill from 2007 that has a state tracker inspector in it, and it will be paid by the four carriers equally as other states do. And that track inspector will be revenue neutral to the state of Minnesota, and it is funded as other states do. And on this track, and finally, if I may say, that will be the provision for enforcing the trackway walkway standard. So I want to thank you very much, committee. This will, I guess the picture is right here. We've had too many injuries in these type of walking conditions. We're asking for key specific limited locations. After such a time, they would come in and repair it so that we can continue to further push down injuries. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pauly. Representative Stevenson, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I had a pressing phone call. I wasn't able to get in on the initial part of this conversation. And I guess what I'm... We had this bill go through last year. We had some contention with this bill. It was in the policy. However, the policy bill didn't go anywhere. My understanding is that you and the other interested parties were going to get together and mitigate this so that it wouldn't be contentious as it came to this committee. I'm understanding that understanding has not been met. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, that's not correct. The United Transportation Union has hosted monthly meetings with the carriers, the same lobbyists that are here since last September 24th on a monthly basis. We have held out for a compromise on this language, and in the crafting of this language, we have asked them to participate up until yesterday. So we finally, until last Friday, we crafted this bill from the Illinois bill, which is essentially the same bill that the four Class I railroads that operate in the state of Minnesota have agreed to in that state, and that the federal district court has upheld on the drainage standard, which they've brought forward. Quite frankly, we added in sections 2, sections 3A and B, and section 7 out of the last year's bill, simply as a point of strength for our workers. And I will close my comments in answering your question, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, by saying we are continued and committed to trying to work for a compromise with the carriers immediately. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Qualley, and you answered my question, sort of. You said it is a compromise, and yet that's not what I'm hearing from the other side. What I'm hearing is that you're basically saying We worked up until yesterday, and then we couldn't reach a compromise, so we pushed this thing forward. And I guess when you say that all four carriers have agreed to this particular provision and that it's going to be a net cost to the state, I would argue that there's still an increased cost to the consumer, because as you put this on, the cost of those walkers or those additional jobs that are going on here go on to the end game of the freight and the monies that we pay to get that freight in the state. So it's not revenue neutral, even though MnDOT may not be paying the tab on this. It's coming out of the pocket of the taxpayers. So I guess I would ask that we kind of not support this bill, because it has not been reached a compromise from all of the agreed-to parties. And until we really have something that we can get everybody to sign off on, my vote would be let's either... And I'm not going to say table it, but I'm going to say let's vote against this thing, bring the parties to the table for a compromise, and bring a good bill forward.
Representative Fortman, you had a question?
No, just a comment. I think the culture of this institution is that we don't do anything until everybody agrees, but sometimes we have to decide. And so I understand they've been working on it. They can't reach a compromise, and so we have to just decide whether we're going to vote for it or not.
Thank you.
Actually, just one last comment to Representative Stevenson, and then I would encourage moving on, is that, you know, these conversations are ongoing, but, you know, we do have a bill deadline, and so this is really literally one of the last bills we're hearing, because we gave it our best shot. We're going to continue to meet, and, I agree with Representative Portman, we wouldn't get, we'd have a lot of gridlock if everyone had to agree on everything, and we're making a good faith effort. If it doesn't happen, this is a good bill. It keeps workers safe, and I'd encourage everyone to support it at this time.
Okay. And any other questions from the committee? All right. Well, then, Representative Hornstein, would you like to renew your motion?
Yeah, I'm renewing my motion to have House File 3896 be moved on to the Transportation Finance Committee for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill of 2008.
Okay, all those in favor of Representative Hornstein's motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
1, 2, 3. The motion carries. Thank you very much, Representative Hornstein. Representative Morrow.
I was expecting to call a handle.
Representative Morrow, which bill would you like us to hear first?
Either way, Madam Chair.
Then why don't we do the spotter truck, the members of House File 3962.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have Jeremy Esselstyn here with me from this Trucking Association to talk about both bills. Representative, we're starting with House File 3962.
Okay. Representative Morrow, the chair moves that that this bill be recommended. There's an amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have an oral amendment for line 2.14.
I'm sorry,
Madam Chair. 2.14 is subdivision A, titled spotter truck.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, the oral amendment would be on line 2.14 after the word truck tractor to include the following: with a manufacturer's certificate of origin, comma, quote, not for on-road use, close quote, not for on-road use, close quote, specification.
Okay. Committee, here's the oral amendment. All right. Great. All those in favor of accepting the oral amendment, the author's oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. As opposed? All right. Amendment carries. So now to your bill here, 3839. The chair moves that the motion before us is to pass the bill to the Transportation Finance Division for possible inclusion in the 2008 Transportation Policy Omnibus Bill. To your bill, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And South South 3962, we have a photo of spotter trucks being circulated. I'll turn to Mr. Esselstyn at this time to explain what a spotter truck is and why this legislation is needed.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you can state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeremy Esselstyn. I work for the Minnesota Trucking Association. Madam Chair, members of the committee, a spotter truck is a single-passenger, single-axle vehicle that a trucking company or a warehouse company might use if they have a large warehouse facility with many docks. It essentially is used to just move trailers around the yard and stage them for loading, unloading, for the drivers to take them, etc. Now, those vehicles come in two types. If the manufacturer designates them as for on-road use or not for on-road use. And in Minnesota, at least for 20 years, maybe longer, maybe not, folks have been able to get a license plate for either of those vehicles, either on-road or off-road. And what we're seeking to do here is correct, to help DVS correct something that's taken place in the last 6 or 8 months. And I believe Mr. Olilla is here if he cares to correct any of my mistakes. But what happened last summer is that DVS reviewed their own rules, discovered that they should not have been issuing license plates to these vehicles, which then put a number of trucking companies into some dire straits. The vehicles cost about $80,000 a piece. And those vehicles that are relatively new now were in a spot. They could no longer be used if they were being used to either ever go on a road, cross the road, drive on a road, even for a short amount of time, or be used in an uncontrolled parking lot. And so what we're seeking to do here is create a 5-year window where those folks would be able to use those trucks in the way that they use them now, depreciate them out, then at that point have no choice but to buy the appropriate vehicle for their use. If they're using it in a uncontrolled situation, either on a road or a parking lot, then they would be able to go ahead and use them the way they're using. After 5 years, they would be required to have a license plate.
Okay, questions from the committee? None? Okay, well then, Representative Morrow, it's your lucky day. All right, I guess then if there are no questions from the committee, then the chair renews the The motion to recommend that this bill pass as amended to the Transportation Finance Division for possible inclusion in the 2008 Transportation Policy Omnibus Bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right. Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
We will move now to House File 3960. All right, then. Representative Pointing,
I'll move House File 3960 for passage and possible inclusion of the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill.
Representative Morrow, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Pointing. Members, this bill seeks to add a curriculum requirement in driver's ed that would be asking Department of Public Safety to adopt rules so that driver's education courses would have a section on truck safety, truck awareness, blind spots, and the like. And again, I'll turn to Mr. Esselstyn to add any further information. And I know that we've also passed around a document concerning this bill.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee again.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the first truck safety summit that was sponsored by the Minnesota Trucking Association and a number of folks who are listed on the second page or the back page of the testimony took place before my time at the MTA. This testimony was drafted by my boss, John Hausladen, and because of our time constraints, I won't go into all of it, but I'll hit on a couple of key points. For trucking companies, safety is paramount. If you have a poor safety record, which is tracked nationally, you're not able to, at some point, purchase insurance, or at the very least, your insurance rates will go up. Not to mention the fact that any time that a vehicle like that crashes, especially with another vehicle, there's likely to be litigation and other things. So again, safety is paramount. A couple facts about safety in trucking. Right now, trucks are driving more miles than they've ever driven before. Meanwhile, our safety record is better than it's ever been. Having said that, even a single crash is too many crashes. So the Truck Safety Summit, first put together in 2006, looked at some of the other factors involved in those crashes that exist. And what some working groups that developed out of that large group discovered is that AAA study cited that in 3 out of 4 cases where a passenger vehicle and a truck collided, the majority of the fault was with the passenger vehicle driver. So what we're seeking to do here is provide kids, especially kids, while they're learning their driving skills and driving habits, some information about how to drive around big trucks. And as Representative Morrow said, there's a lot of information that could be taught about blind spots, stopping distances, etc. And to then pair that classroom experience with a lab, if you will, a behind-the-wheel experience around trucks so that they can properly learn what it means when a truck says makes wide left turns or makes wide right turns, etc. So what we're seeking to do here is address an extraneous factor that drives crashes in trucks with this education.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrow, is there a fiscal note on this? There would be some expense to the DDS, I would think, for the driver's manual.
Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Representative Ruth, I understand that a fiscal note was being put together. I'm looking about the room to see the folks who may... Okay, I'm up here to hear that about it's not completed. I don't know what the fiscal note might even read. I'd be guessing with their fiscal note on the Senate side.
No, there's no fiscal note on the Senate side. And of course, the intention with this legislation is not to generate a lot of costs, but use existing resources and direct attention to the driving around big trucks component of the already, 30 hours and 6 hours.
Representative Ruth?
Oh, ma'am, here, just a section 2 does talk about the driver's manual, and then says we're added. Unless we could delete that piece, if that, since you would prefer to do that. But that would be an expense, or we could, if you prefer, ma'am, here, we could hear from DDS, so I don't know if it's wrong with them. But
I think we'll yield about Representative Ruth, about yes. Chair, DDS, I think, would
sure.
like to speak to this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Deb Carlson. I'm the exam program manager. And I can tell you that basically the language in this bill is already a practice that we commonly have in the driver's manual and in the driver education program. So our position is neutral on this. But we do not have a fiscal bill put together yet if it goes to rulemaking.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure why we have the bill then if this has already been done. I'm confused. Maybe somebody can explain this to me.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Ruth, the reason the bill is in front of you is that while there is a suggested component of driver's education in the classroom, there is not anything, at least that we're aware of, currently practiced in the behind-the-wheel component. And our suggestion is that during those 6 hours, the student be instructed at some point, whether it's during the freeway driving or at some point, to drive the vehicle next to or around the truck to complement that classroom experience.
Representative Ruth?
I think.
Madam Chair, I can state in the rules right now for the what we call behind the wheel type of training that the rules state interacting with highway users, freeway driving, highway driving, and so we feel it is covered.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Ruth. Any other questions from the committee? None. Okay. Well then. Representative Hornstein, would you like to renew your
renewing
motion?
Renewing my motion to have House File 3960 passed for possible inclusion in the 2008, the Transportation Finance Division for possible inclusion in the Transportation Policy Omnibus.
All right, all those in favor of Representative Hornstein's motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? All right, motion carries. Thank you, Representative Morrow.
Where are you going?
All right, Representative Hornstein. Members, we have House File 3800. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Welcome back to the committee. Would you like to move your bill?
Sure. Members, I'd like to move House File 3800 for passage to the Transportation Finance Committee for possible inclusion of the omnibus transportation policy bill 2008.
And is there an amendment?
Yes,
we have.
I don't
have
the code.
It's the A1 amendment.
Members, while Mr. Elwood's getting that, I just want to say this is our last bill of the year. And as the chair, I want to thank all of the members for their participation. And also, of course, Mr. Burris and Ms. Zuras again, as always, a wonderful job that you've done, as well as our partisan staff from each side. And Madam Chair, to you, who did quite a bit of chairing this year, so I appreciate that. And Ms. Maher and Ms. Mann, thank you so very much for your work this year.
You're very welcome. So would you like to move your amendment?
Yes. It's an A1 amendment. I will have Mr. Elwood from Legal Aid explain the amendment to the committee.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Elwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This amendment is very technical in nature. It simply moves a section that's in the bill currently into a separate subdivision. It's really more of a statutory construction issue. It's very technical in nature, and if you want more about it, I'm happy to answer the question.
Are there any questions from the committee on the amendment? If not, then all those in favor of Representative Hornstein's amendment, at the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Oh, the amendment carried. All right, then, would you like to...
Well, yes, members, very quickly, this is a bill, again, familiar to the committee. Representative Palin carried it last year. We have had some progress between several of the stakeholders, and so we have a new improved House File 3800, and I will have Mr. Elwood very briefly explain the bill. And again, since this is familiar to many of you, perhaps we can focus on at least some of the changes from last year's version.
That would be wonderful. Yes, Mr. Elwood, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Ron Elwood, Legal Aid. This is the Get Your Stuff Out of the Car bill that you've seen for years. But the difference, the significant difference this year is we have really listened and heard the concerns of the industry, the towing industry. And so what we've heard about this is that we don't want to hurt people who simply can't pay, can't afford, people who are homeless, people who are our clients, people who are poor. But we do want to have the ability to have the leverage for people who can but do not, for whatever reason, choose to pay their towing fees and storage fees. And so the question then becomes, how do you separate the can't pays from the won't pays? And that's what this bill does. It provides a formula to say if you are homeless or you are recipient of public assistance or of an income qualifier, that is what we use throughout statutes to create a very bright line between poverty and non-poverty. If that's the case and you can prove it, then you are entitled to retrieve your belongings, and if not, you are not entitled to retrieve those belongings except for a limited amount of basic health and safety items like medicine and medically related equipment. We'd heard of a story last year. Senator Jungbauer talked about a personal experience where a woman, friends were injured in a car accident. The husband was killed. The wife was an invalid, and she could not retrieve her wheelchair. And so that would be covered under this bill. And, one of the other issues that has been a concern over the last couple of years is how widespread is this problem. I think Mr. Dahl, who's with us today, will expound a little bit on the magnitude of the problem. But I just want to, we have many clients and many stories. I will just relate one from St. Cloud. Person's car was stolen and then eventually impounded. When to retrieve the goods, he was not able to pay, obviously. He was poor, and one of our clients, and was not able to get either his birth certificate, his W-2s, tax returns, which, by the way, would be filed to get an earned income tax credit, or any of his clothes back. And so that's the kind of thing that we're trying to resolve, but we are providing the opportunity for towers to maintain the leverage they need where somebody cannot prove they're in the income category we've provided.
Mr. Dahl, do you want to sum it up in about 5 minutes?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Dahl. I'm the Executive Director with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. How extensive is this problem? You're probably asking, and I myself asked that question, thinking of all the things that we want to do to end homelessness. And yet when we have talked with people who are homeless in shelter, this was the thing they were most passionate about. Because as one of the folks, Dorothy Day, said, almost everyone in here has had this happen to them. Where if you've had a car and you're homeless and that is where you store your belongings and your car gets towed because you have no other place to store your belongings, you lose everything. Case of Tony had a camper or a van for about 2 months ago. He had moved it several times to avoid being towed. He stayed each night at Dorothy Day Center. He tried to get his car was towed because someone had called to say that the car was in the neighborhood too long. He tried to get his stuff back, but he had no money and they would not allow him to get his stuff. He lost everything, which included $2,500 worth of tools, all of his clothes and personal belongings, important papers like his military discharge records, citations, and awards. He also lost sentimental effects, namely a picture of his deceased mother with her birth and death certificates and a little bell that she had since age 13. This is just one example, but these are everybody's personal belongings that are just lost because the towing company is allowed to hold on to not just the car, but everything that's inside. And so having seen that this is something that so many people that are staying in shelter have complained about, I thank you for taking up this bill. I think we should do all that we can to reduce the criminalization of homelessness. And when you can only live in public because you have no place to live, what can we do to reduce the criminalization of people who have no place except public places to store their belongings? And this is one thing that we can do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Madam Chair.
Bellwood?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just one final thing. I want to point out that the Catholic Charities is a strong supporter of this bill, and while we don't have anybody unable to be here today, they were also interested to explain about some stories that they had, some clients they had. So we do appreciate your taking the bill, and want to thank Representative Hornstein for bringing the bill forward.
All right. Questions from the committee? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hornstein. Good to see you. When you said those magic words, get your stuff back. Yeah. We had this battle last year, and we had the auto tours and parts people that were in the audience here, and I'm kind of curious, and hopefully your response will quell its curiosity. They've been notified that this bill is moving forward.
Madam Chair, and members, I know Mr. Elwood has been in contact with some of the stakeholders, and I'll let him comment on that.
Mr. Elwood?
Madam Chair and Representative Severson, the service station dealers folks who were here last year, they have a lobbyist here. They're aware of it. I have been in contact for the towers. They're not, they're different. They're part of the service station dealers, so presumably they were aware. But they are a separate organization. But I did have a conversation with the vice president weeks ago, and he is aware that we have been bringing the bill.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Yes.
And so, in these conversations, has there been peace in the valley, as we talked about last year? Representative Hornstein and I kind of talked about this bill coming forward, and we had not gotten peace in the valley. So, do we have peace?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Severson. Again, I'll let Representative Elwood, he's been in more direct contact with the stakeholders. I'll let him
Mr. Elwood?
Answer that.
Madam Chair and Representative Severson, I had sent the bill draft this year to those folks. I had a conversation with the Vice President explaining what our approach was, explaining that we believed that we had met all of their concerns and invited them to come back and talk to me about this bill. I have not heard from them at all, so my presumption is that they're fine. Otherwise, they'd be here or would have called me and said that they're not satisfied with the bill.
It's a follow-up, Madam Chair, and you know, we had this in committee last year. One of the things that we had talked about was the issue of how these vehicles are getting to the side of the road, who's getting saddled with the responsibility of towing them, and who is actually paying for the expense of towing them. And some of the issues going through licensure, that actually a lot of these vehicles are bought at, you know, below $1,000, and they drive them until they don't drive anymore, and then they put them on the side of the road. The county ends up picking them up. These towers that we're talking about here end up eating these funds. And it's not like they can use them for parts, because most of them are so old that they don't use the parts anymore, and it costs them money to dispose of these issues. So I would anticipate that in order to get peace in the valley here, we would have to have some testimony from those who have the dollars at stake here, the ones who are, it's coming out of their pocket, because this is exactly what we're doing here, is we're basically saying we're going to means test them, but if they're so poor that they can't meet the means test, then they can take their stuff out. Well, I can guarantee you it's going to throw a smoke screen up so that they're not going to know what to do. And that's a major concern for me, particularly in an environment where we're having a depressed economy and people are making ends, stretched to make ends meet at this point. And the last thing I need to do is saddle more regulations on. So I would hope that if this goes to transportation finance, and that would be they are notified and that they have a voice in this process, and that we don't just try and do this under the dead of night. And I appreciate that.
Representative Hornstein?
Well, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and Mr. Stevenson, Representative Stevenson, you know, I know sometimes that, you know, we would like to have things notice far in advance, but you know, we do have a process here at the legislature in which bills are introduced, they're posted on the website, hearings are noticed. Clearly those who follow this committee and the legislation
are given notice of these hearings, and so I'm less concerned about that. We will have obviously more avenues for input as this bill goes to not only the final markup, but presumably we'll have a floor debate and we'll have conference committee deliberations, and so I'm really confident that any concerns will be adequately addressed. And again, we do have a process here. This bill is not, I would just really strongly can argue against that anything here has been done in the middle of the night without adequate notice. This has been noticed as any other bill has been noticed before this legislature. All 4,010 of them, I guess, that have been introduced to date this biennium.
And to that point, Representative, and Representative Hornstein, I know you to be a fair man, and very, very easy to work with, very enjoyable to work with. So I do appreciate it.
I appreciate it, and again, and I would say this as well, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, if there is a tower in your district or in any other part of the state that would have concerns, then we will certainly direct them to myself or to Mr. Elwood, and we would be happy to talk through those concerns.
Representative Bruce?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, just a quick question. The people that are currently having trouble homeless, for example, we have legal aid services available. Have they ever been used? I mean, are these people taken care of?
Mr. Elwood.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Ruth, if they have a legal problem, certainly they would be coming to legal aid. But if they came to legal aid and asked us to help them to retrieve their belongings out of the vehicle, unless we pass the bill, we have no legal tool to do that. And our answer would be, unfortunately, the law doesn't allow that. And that's why we need this bill.
Surprising, Madam Chair, that, I mean, I think you can go to an attorney for anything. But thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bruce. Any other questions from the committee? All right, Representative Hornstein, would you like to renew your motion?
Renewing the motion to pass the House File 3800 as amended for to the Transportation Finance Committee for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill.
All those in favor of Representative Hornstein's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion carries. Thank you very much, Representative
Thank Hornstein. You, Madam Chair and members.
We do have one piece of housekeeping, members, before you leave. We have to actually vote for House File 3835. It was Representative Dabney's bill. And we have to vote, the motion is to pass as amended to the Transportation Finance Division for possible inclusion in the Transportation Policy 2008 Omnibus Bill. So all those in favor of the chair's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries there. And members, we have 2 minutes to spare, and we are adjourned.
What an efficient chair.
Thank you.